Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just click the link in the show description to support now.
OG.
Make some noise!
On this episode of Inside Boxing Live, we talk to 154-pound champion Jared Herd. We'll get his thoughts on his win over Arislandi Lara, as well as him calling out Jermell Charlo. Also on the show, we'll talk to heavyweight contender Jarrell Miller. He's got a big fight this weekend at the Barclays Center. We also have another edition of Tough Takes, and in case you missed it, an update on some cryptocurrency. Inside Boxing Live, coming up next. Everybody, welcome to another edition of Inside Boxing Live. I'm your host, Dan Canobio. In this episode, we will talk to 154-pound champ Jared Herd. We'll get his thoughts on his fight with Arislandi Lara, as well as him calling out Jermell Charlo. He wants that big fight at 154. We'll talk about his unconventional rise to the top here. Wasn't it a really good prospect, or he was good, but he wasn't like a touted prospect. Wasn't an Olympian or anything like that. It's a really interesting interview. We'll talk to him. We'll also talk to 3 minutes of Jarrell Miller. He was apparently in a very big rush, but we learned a lot of things about Jarrell Miller in those 3 minutes. So you're going to want to stick around for that one. In addition to that, there was a lot of boxing this past weekend. Probably one of the more busy weekends in the sport. It's kind of weird how that all works with boxing. 2 weekends ago, we didn't have any boxing at all. No major fights. He went the whole weekend without any boxing. And then this weekend, I feel like around the clock, you had fights on all over the place. We'll start with Carl Frampton. He picked up a win over Nonito Donaire. He outboxed Donaire. It was a sold-out fight in Belfast, which just shows you that boxing is just on fire over there, over in Europe. Frampton was rocked in the 11th, but he came out on top. Donaire is about 5 years past his expiration date, but he still put on a tough fight, and he, like I said, had Frampton rocked there in the 11th. But this sets up a huge fight down the road, and we'll get to it, and in case you missed it, with Frampton and maybe Oscar Valdez. Now, Frampton wants it. I know that Valdez wants it. That guy doesn't back down from any fight. So if it gets us that fight, you know, between Frampton and Valdez, all for it. That was a great fight. I'm going to sum up Amir Khan versus Phil LoGreco for you right here on the podcast. Phil LoGreco gets into the ring. The fight starts. One punch land. Fight is over. There it is. Amir Khan wins in a first round drubbing of Phil LoGreco. Drew 9,000 fans in Liverpool following a 2-year layoff. So people love Amir Khan. Listen, I'm a huge Amir Khan fan. I love this. I like when he gets into the ring. He always puts on interesting fights. You never know what's going to happen in the lead up to the fight. They had that like fracas between Khan and LoGreco. We didn't know if it was planned or not. It looked kind of planned. But in terms of fights, like Amir Khan will fight everybody. And he's going to look like he's in a really good position right now in his career. Could we see Kell Brook next? He said he wants to fight Errol Spence. He wants to fight Danny Garcia. Tell you what, Amir Khan is in a great, great spot right now. And he actually, you know, flipped it on Kell Brook. He said, I'm actually chasing Kell Brook. You know, Kell Brook isn't chasing me. So it was interesting to see. I know Kell Brook was in the ring after that fight. So that's a fight that's been brewing for years now. And maybe we're finally going to see it here in 2018. A fight that's huge over in England is Amir Khan and Kell Brook. But that was the early portion of Saturday. Then I made my way over to the Barclays Center. And if you heard anything about this lead up to fight week here for this triple header, you knew that there was a lot of antics going on. They canceled the media workout at Gleason's gym because of there were rumors that there was going to be some gang meet up there. You know, the rivals didn't like each other. You know, the Charlos were talking crap about Broner. Broner was calling the Charlos cokeheads. It was just nonstop, out of control antics leading up to the fight week. I was there Saturday night, and right when I walked in the arena, you know, something was different. There was a more tense feeling atmosphere in the Barclays Center. Tons of cops. Tons of plainclothes cops, tons of detectives, just more security than I've ever remembered there, all because of this Tekashi 6ix9ine. I mean, I feel like this dude played it perfectly. Tekashi 6ix9ine. Didn't even know he was a rapper until this week, but apparently he is. He's from Brooklyn, and he had a beef with Adrian Broner. But I'll tell you what, I feel like every 5 seconds I heard the name Tekashi 6ix9ine. It was going all throughout the arena, all throughout fight week. So, you know, his marketing people did a great job because his name was everywhere, you know, and he wasn't even really involved with the lead-up to his fight in any way or shape or form besides beefing with Adrian Broner. But being in the arena that night, it's always fun to be in the Barclays Center. The fans showed up. It was absolutely sold out. You saw the tweet from Steven Espinosa saying that they originally configured the arena for 9,000, but had to add an additional, you know, like 3,400. Place was loud. It was sold out. And I couldn't believe how many fans were in the arena for Gervonta Davis. He was the first fight of the night, and he really impressed me. I mean, a lot of people want to get on Gervonta Davis because he signed with Floyd Mayweather, and he put on a terrible performance on the Mayweather-McGregor undercard where he could have really capitalized on a huge opportunity, came in overweight, you know, had that rabid punch behind the neck. Just really bad performance, Gervonta Davis, back in August. But it seems like, and I actually want to give him credit here, for he seems like he took his career back and taking it more seriously, and you saw it, man, in the ring when he just took out Cuellar. I mean, he nasty body attack. 35% of his landed punches were to the body. I mean, he was super quick in there. I mean, Cuellar obviously is past his prime a little bit, but I was really impressed with Gervonta Davis. First fight of the night, second round knockout, got him out of there. And he said afterwards that, you know, maybe Lomachenko is not really, I'm not really ready. He didn't say it in so many words, but maybe not Lomachenko. Give me the winner of Billy Dibb. And who am I forgetting? Who's Billy Dibb fighting? Billy Dibb. Somebody. Anybody. Bueller. We're going to move on. But Charlo got into the ring next, and he was explosive, man. I mean, I know he's fighting. Tevin Farmer, Billy Dibb, was made this past weekend. And then the winner of that is obviously going to fight Gervonta Davis. And we all want to see Tevin Farmer versus Gervonta Davis all over the place right now. Maybe I'm a little high from all the smoke that was in the Barclays Center. But then we moved on to Jermell Charlo. He looked amazing. I mean, second round knockout. I mean, the left hook from hell that sent Centeno flying. I mean, that fight ended. He barely even broke a sweat before that one was over. So you had the first two fights over within an hour or even less at the Barclays Center, which gave me a lot of time to go into the back area, check out, see if there's anything going on. I like to do that for you fans here because this is the show for the fans. Not as much beef as I thought there would be. The Barclays did a really good job of keeping that back area clear. It wasn't like you didn't have Danny Jacobs walking around talking trash to a Charlo. You didn't have 50 Cent, or I did see 50 Cent. You didn't have his whole crew walking around. You didn't have all the fighters mixing it up in that back area. That's because of all the gang-related stuff and all the antics. Supposedly there was a gunshot that went off. I read a few reports. No one could confirm it. You know, I was talking to a few reporters after the fight. You know, they said that they heard about it. Didn't actually hear the gunshot, but no one denied it and no one confirmed it. But no one got hurt. But it was a weird weekend in the Barclays Center. And you got to think that maybe Showtime or PBC or the powers that be aren't going to put Broner Charlo on the same card moving forward. I mean, there's too much headaches. I mean, you look on the faces of everyone behind the scenes, you know, the Lou DiBella and his staff and the PBC and their staff, they looked exhausted when this card was over. They were just happy that everything went off smoothly. The fights were good. But they got to think twice about, you know, how they do their matchmaking. That brought us to our main event of the evening, Adrian Broner, Jesse Vargas. Really exciting fight. Really like a tale of two fights. Vargas came out hot out of the gate. He was throwing his jab. He was really making that like a factor early on. Look at this. Vargas outlanded Broner in rounds 1 through 6, 124-82. Around the fifth or sixth round, I was like, wow, is this it? Is this the last we're going to see of Adrian Broner in a huge fight? Because he did not come out throwing his hands. He said all week long that he was going to see a new Adrian Broner with his new trainer, Kevin Cunningham. But it was the same AB. You saw the same AB with the shoulder roll, you know, throwing one or two punches, you know, shaking his head that you didn't hit me, which everyone knows means that you did hurt me. And then came, you know, round 7 through 12. Where Broner outlanded Vargas 112-79. And look at the power department, 99-56 around 7 through 12. And ultimately, it ended in a draw. I mean, you could have had this for Broner. You could have had it for Vargas. I think a draw was fair. And then afterwards, I mean, we'll talk about it a little later in our tough takes. But Jim Gray got into the ring. And Adrian Broner, of course, is just He's just a fool. Let's just call it what he is. The guy's a clown. He knows he is. Because he gets the microphone, he tells Jesse Vargas that he beat his ass, and you know he's throwing out all these derogatory terms and just making a fool of himself. And then you see him come out of the ring, he came right to our area at ringside, and he's hugging Jesse Vargas, and he's saying we're cool. He just puts on a show. Like, if you can just separate the fact that Adrian Broner with a mic in his hand is really not anything like Adrian Broner without the cameras rolling. I mean, but you know what? It was a sold-out arena. I would not be surprised if Showtime scores one of their highest ratings of the year, because people are enamored with Adrian Broner for some reason, despite the fact that he's maybe a B-plus fighter at this point in his career. But, you know, we're going to see a rematch. I mean, that version of Adrian Broner, I don't think beats a lot of guys in his division. I mean, I would have liked to have seen what he could have done against Figueroa, but you got to give your hat, you got to tip your hat to Jesse Vargas, because that dude is tough as nails. I mean, he was eating huge shots down the stretch, and they came over. They put the two fighters right behind our setup afterwards, and I was just looking at Vargas's face from really up close. I mean, he was literally, if you watch the Showtime replay, you can see me afterwards. They were literally in my grill, and I got a very good look at Jesse Vargas's face, and it was completely bruised up, and he went to the hospital. But it was a great weekend of fights there at the Barclays Center, a tense atmosphere, a lot of weed in the air. I mean, everyone and their mother was smoking at the Barclays Center. We got some other news and notes here. Canelo, I think you've heard of him. Canelo Alvarez suspended for living under a rock. You know that he took clenbuterol, failed two drug tests, and it was a long, drawn-out scenario where he ultimately pulled out of the fight with Triple G. But now the Nevada State Commission has finally had their ruling. They say that Canelo suspended for just only 6 months. People lost their mind on Twitter about that. They think that they were being super easy on Canelo. The fact that Canelo cooperated, you know, and he didn't exactly fight it, they gave him a 6 month no fine either. But you know, if you look on the flip side of things, and this is a great point, that you know, the fact that he can only fight one time now in 2018, which will be in September probably against Triple G, he lost out on $20 million. You know, Canelo makes $20 million now when he walks into the ring, upwards of that amount. So you didn't have a fine. You got suspended for 6 months, but now he can't fight in May. He loses $20 million. And that's a pretty big fine for Canelo Alvarez. But it looks like Triple G is going to be fining I'm not even going to try to say this guy's last name, but you all know who he is. They're fighting on May 5th. And it just came across Twitter that Chocolatito will be back in action. He's going to fight a 10-rounder. He's going to fight on the undercard. He's fought, how many times has he fought on Triple G's undercard? So we're going to see him back in the ring. Chocolatito will fight Pedro Guevara in a 10-rounder. We'll see if Chocolatito has anything left in the tank. But it was a great week for boxing. A really busy one. A lot of going on. And the upcoming is even more. We got this weekend with Danny Jacobs taking on Sulecki. That's going to be at the Barclays Center. We'll be at ringside once again. We got Big Baby Jarrell Miller, the 3-minute interview guy. He'll be fighting Duhapis. Hopefully, Jarrell's more interested in his fight than he was for the interview he did with us. You're not going to want to miss this one. It was pretty interesting. But more coming your way here on Inside Boxing Live. Jarrett Hurd, Jarrell Miller, a new Tough Takes. You're not going to want to miss this one in case you missed it, and more coming up next. All right, before we get to Jarrell Miller, we're going to talk to you about Jack Doyle's Restaurant and Bar. Jack Doyle's is located on 35th Street and 7th Avenue, right in the heart of Manhattan. It's a great place to catch a game, catch the fight. You just go in there and for trivia night. You can do anything you want in there. Jack Doyle's is a great place. Tell them the Inside Boxing Live crew sent you. Right now, we're joined by Big Baby Jarrell Miller, a busy man. He gets ready to fight on HBO this weekend at the Barclays Center. Jarrell, thank you for taking some time to join us here on Inside Boxing Live.
I appreciate it. Thank you for having me.
All right, Johan Duhapis, that's your opponent here. What do you know about him? And I feel like they're just feeding you these tall European guys.
He's a decent, durable. He took a beating, so I'm making sure April 28 he's going to take another beating.
Are you tired of all the weight questions? I feel like you get peppered with them.
Yeah, of course. I mean, hey, it is what it is. I let them know what it is, and I'm a big guy. You know, I can't help it. And that's how I just handle my business. I go in there and I dominate guys.
What are you thinking you're gonna be coming in on fight night?
I'm not too sure, but I believe it's close to 300. It's not over, but whatever it is, I'll be there.
Now, you're going to be fighting in front of your Brooklyn people. Your last fight was at Nassau Coliseum, but you're back at the Barclays Center. You're in support of Daniel Jacobs. How special is it for you to fight in front of the Brooklyn people?
I mean, it's always good to be home and fight in front of Brooklyn. I mean, it's always a dream come true. The main thing is being ready, prepared, and throwing a show for the crowd.
Now, I want to throw out some names here in the heavyweight division. I want you to tell me what you think of each guy, some strengths and weaknesses for each guy. You ready?
Correct.
Tyson Fury.
I'm glad he's back. I'm going to knock him out.
What do you think are his strengths?
What I think about his strengths?
Yeah, what do you think are his strengths?
He's long, he's rangy, and he's definitely tall, so that's always good in particular
skills. You can appreciate a guy that talks, because you're a pretty good talker yourself.
Yeah, most definitely.
How about Dillian White? What do you like out of Dillian White?
Oh, definitely knock him out. Not a ticket seller.
Not a ticket seller?
Not really a big ticket seller, no.
Okay, all right. Now I'm going to move on to the big boys, Deontay Wilder.
Oh, definitely knocking him out. The windmill definitely got to take
I'm reading about some type of beef. You got a beef with Deontay Wilder?
Family man.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, I hear you.
You got a beef with Deontay Wilder?
No, there ain't no beef. For me, ain't no beef. It's competitive competition, but, when it comes to boxing, I'm going to knock him out.
So you're pretty content and you're going to knock out all these guys. I'm not going to even get to Anthony Joshua next. I know what the answer is going to be. You're going to knock out Anthony Joshua too, right?
Yeah, say it again?
I said I don't even have to get to the next guy because you seem like you want to knock everyone out. So I assume your answer for Anthony Joshua is a knockout.
Oh, I'm knocking him out before five.
So
lucky making the six.
Oh, wow. Six rounds with Anthony Joshua. Obviously there's a lot of rumors out there that if you win this fight, you're going to fight Anthony Joshua in August at the Barclays Center. Do you think that adds more pressure for your performance?
No. When it comes to me fighting, I'll do what I do best, and I'm going to go in there and win by any means necessary. The main thing is getting a win and move on to the next.
Did Eddie Hearn reach out to you? I know he's obviously your promoter, but were there any talks about potentially fighting?
No. Obviously, he's not my promoter. That's the thing you got to media guys don't do your homework. That is read one article and think it's right. Eddie Hearn is not my promoter.
Who's your promoter?
You know what I mean? So make sure you put that in. Yes, nobody's my promoter. I have a partner with the Theater. I'm my own promoter. I'm Big Baby Promotions. And I have a promotional partnership with Salida Promotions.
Gotcha.
So I'm my own promoter. So. Oh. I'm not your average fighter.
Not your average fighter.
But I gotta go though.
You gotta go. All right. That's Jarrell Miller. Thanks, buddy. Jarrell Miller in a rush. He must be a busy guy. He only gave us 5 minutes, but we learned that he's his own promoter. So one thing he should learn about boxing is that if you want to be a big boxer, you gotta go out and do media obligations. So thanks to Jarrell Miller for 3.5 minutes of his time, and we'll move forward here with Inside Boxing Live. Busy weekend of fights we had here in Brooklyn, all over the world, really, and a lot of news and notes to get you all caught up for. So here is this week's In Case You Missed It. Let's start off with Mikey Garcia, a guy that's very hard to track down, because I tried to get him on the show numerous times, but he promised he'll come on down the road. But even keeping track of Mikey Garcia, which weight he's going to fight at, well, who he wants to fight. Last week he wants to fight Godzilla. This week he wants to fight Errol Spence. But it looks like Mikey Garcia, he's going to give up his belt at 140, and he's going to defend at 135. Most likely, we're going to see him fighting against Robert Easter, maybe sometime in the summer, which really, from a physical standpoint, aesthetically, that is just a hilarious stare down that's going to be, because Mikey Garcia is no taller than 5'8", 5'9", and Easter's like 6'2". So that fight's going to be awesome, and it's going to be a unification bout at 135. So Mikey Garcia giving up the belt at 140. To stay at 135 and see what he can do there. Moving forward, you see this. Creed 2 is just started shooting their movie there in Philly. They were spotted on the UPenn campus. All the students were going crazy. Michael B. Jordan, Sylvester Stallone, the whole cast from the really awesome first movie in Creed. But I don't know how I feel about Creed 2 because Ryan Coogler, who obviously did Black Panther and the first Creed movie, as well as some other really awesome movies. Fruitvale Station was a really good one. He's not involved with this movie. He's not directing this one. So it's Sylvester Stallone, who's no slouch. I mean, he knows a thing or two about making Rocky movies. But it should be interesting. I think in this movie, Michael B. Jordan's character, obviously the son of Adonis Creed, is going up against Drago's son. So, you know, only in Hollywood can we make these matchups. But Creed 2, we're going to see it soon in theaters. This one is a weird one. This is Manny Pacquiao. All the headlines coming out of Manny Pacquiao lately are very odd. I mean, he's fighting in Malaysia against Lucas Matisse in July. But look at this one. Manny Pacquiao is moving forward with his own cryptocurrency. I mean, it's all the rage right now. Floyd Mayweather has his own one, so Pacquiao goes, I have to have my own Bitcoin. I mean, when I woke up this morning, I was like, man, I have to get some Pacquiao coin in my pocket. So Manny Pacquiao is at this point of his career where he's going to the highest bidder. He's fighting in, you know, obscure countries. He is making business decisions that aren't popular. He's broken up, or is he broken up with Freddie Roach? Is Boo Boy going to be in his camp? So Manny Pacquiao all over the map, and one thing we know about Pacquiao is he likes to make money. And I read when I was reading the article on this cryptocurrency deal, it said that Pacquiao's net worth in boxing is $510 million that he made during his career. And you still see reports of him either being bankrupt or being close to it. So it's amazing how much money this guy blew through. But if you're interested in getting some Bitcoin with Pacquiao's face on it, it might be coming to you very shortly. How about this? Sergey Kovalev and Marcus Brown fight is off. Marcus Brown got into a little bit of legal problems here. Domestic dispute with his, I think it was his girlfriend or significant other. Two arrests in like a month span. And Main Events pulled the plug on it. And it was interesting because I saw a tweet. It was like, did, you know, obviously Main Events is run by Kathy Duva and a lot of women. You know, did they feel a little slighted by this, that they didn't want to be in business with a guy that potentially struck a woman? So that was one thing out there that people were talking about. But either way, that fight is off, and it looks like Eleider Alvarez, who has been a mandatory for Kovalev for quite some time now, will get the call. That's actually a better fight, in my opinion. Alvarez is a tall, rangy guy, and he'll be going up against Kovalev probably in the summer. And Kovalev has fought his last maybe three fights outside of the Ward fight at the theater at Madison Square Garden, so that's probably a front runner for that one. Bob Arum is in the news every single week, so we have to highlight it here in case you missed it. He says that Frampton Valdez will not be hard to make, which was news to our ears. It feels like Top Rank has really stepped it up here in 2018, whether it's their deal with ESPN or now their deal with ESPN Plus, them picking up fights. The Con LaGreco fight was on ESPN Plus, and they made a strong push to get Triple G. I mean, Triple G was hanging there in the balance. They see that HBO is under some financial issues, and ESPN's got deep pockets, and especially with the boxing. So they try to slide in there and steal Triple G and put him on ESPN on May 5th. And HBO was like, oh, whoa, hold up here. You know, Triple G is our guy, and we have enough money to put that fight on. But Bob Arum says that Frampton Valdez is a fight that we can see. Obviously, Frampton fought over the weekend. Picked up a nice win over Nonito Donaire. Valdez had an absolute war with Scott Quigg. Last time we saw Valdez, he was on a stretcher with a broken jaw and a broken hand. I think everyone wants to see Valdez fight again. And Frampton Valdez, you know, where do I sign for that one? That is just fireworks. And we're potentially seeing it on ESPN at the end of the year, and what has been an awesome year for boxing. And lastly, Nick, we got a HBO boxing training truck. If you're in the Dumbo area this week, I don't know how many of our listeners live in Dumbo. If you do, then good for you. You made a lot of good decisions in life. But they're driving around this HBO boxing truck with Danny Jacobs' face on it. As we know, Danny Jacobs is from Brooklyn, New York. And they're giving out free boxing lessons to kids. They are giving out school supplies. I think it's pretty cool because HBO and Danny Jacobs had to be a little creative with their marketing. I live in Brooklyn, so I see his posters are everywhere. He's got a huge billboard outside the Barclays Center, and he has a pretty big fight coming up this Saturday at Barclays against Sulecki, who a lot of people are saying it's going to be a sneaky good fight. I mean, he's a guy that fought most of his career at 154, making the move up to 160 to face off with Jacobs. And Jacobs said it himself that this guy is not Luis Arias. You know, he's going to come to fight, and it's going to be a sneaky good fight at Barclays on Saturday night. But there it is. In case you missed it, we're trying to keep you up to date here on Inside Boxing Live. Before we get to our interview with Jared Hurd, I want to talk to you about Jack Doyle's Restaurant and Bar. Jack Doyle's is located on 35th Street and 7th Avenue, right in the heart of Manhattan, just a few steps away from Madison Square Garden. Go in there, and they got two floors. They got drink specials. They have a great staff there. Tell them that the Inside Boxing Live crew sent you, and they will take care of you. And with that, we'll bring in here the Jared Hurd, one of the hottest fighters in the game right now. Jared, thank you for taking some time with us here on Inside Boxing Live.
LeFron, thank you guys, man.
Now, I saw you out at the fights on Saturday at the Barclays Center before the fights kicked off. We were talking a little bit. What'd you make of the fights? It was some pretty explosive night of action there at the Barclays Center.
Yeah, it was a great card, man. You know, lived up to what I thought it would be. Some great knockouts, and, you know, even the main event was nice, too.
Now, you were a guy that's fought at the Barclays Center a couple times. What's that experience like, and do you enjoy performing in front of the New York crowd?
Yeah, man, that crowd, you know, big arena, it holds a lot of, you can feel the energy when you were in there. And I love fighting at the Barclays Center. It's on the East Coast on my side. So a lot of fans have come up from here in Maryland, and I love it.
Do fighters like feed off of the crowd when you hear the crowd and they're chanting your name, or it's a big round and they're cheering, or the boos on the other hand? Do fighters actually like hear that, and does it motivate you more in the middle of a round?
I'm not sure of all fighters, but for me, you know, it does give me a little motivation when I hear the crowd give the chant swift. Yeah.
That's good stuff. We're talking with Jared Hurd right now on Inside Boxing Live. Now, your amateur career is something that is a little unconventional. You weren't like a decorated amateur. I think you had a 32-8 record. You weren't a prize prospect, but there was a promoter along the way who saw you down in Maryland, and he saw something in you. Talk a little about your come up here, getting to the top of the game, and now a unified world champion. But bring us back to when you were a prospect, and how hard was it for you to get noticed?
Oh, it was pretty hard, you know. Like you said, I didn't have a big amateur career, and you know, turning professional, that people was afraid if I was gonna be able to sell tickets, or you know, if I had friends from these styles that people wanted to see. And Ross Malavinsky, who was Keystone Promotion, you know, he gave me an opportunity, gave me a chance to put him on the card. And he was surprised, man. So I think second most tickets that night for my professional debut. And I only had me on there, and I got a first round knockout. And then, you know, ever since then, I became the most fighter that Keystone Promotion has ever had on the card. I still hold the record today. And they always was calling back. And, you know, at the end of the day, I just wanted to be a guy, you know, working towards becoming the main event on Keystone Card. I never expected world titles and things like that. I never looked that far. And, you know, eventually we'd be starting coming to main event. And, you know, and I set other goals, like maybe I could have a fight out of town. Maybe I could have one out of town. So if we start having fights out of town, then eventually I said maybe we can get signed. We wanted to get signed to, our goal was always get signed to Al Haymon. And, you know, I had a videographer named Chris Walson who recorded me and all my fights, you know, put them on YouTube. So he got him to put a together video, and we sent it out to Al Haymon. Man, he loved me. And, you know,
the rest is history.
The rest is history.
What is it like to get that call from Al Haymon saying he wants to sign you to his roster?
you know, on the phone, when I'm on the phone, I'm all calm and collective, but, you know, like, as we hang up, I'm saying, all right, thank you for him and nice talk to you. I appreciate this opportunity. Hang up the phone, man. We get jumping around the gym, running around.
That's awesome.
Screaming. Yeah, it's great.
Now, take us back to the Lara fight. It's a fight that was very big in your career, and it was a great fight, back and forth, a lot of action. Go to the 12th round. Did you think you needed that knockdown? It was on your card. Did you think you needed it to get the win?
No. And I feel like me or my team, my corner, we felt like we was up for the call. We knew we had to fight in the bag. But see, that's the difference between, I feel, that makes a fighter who they are. I look at Adrian Broner fight the other day. He was, to me, I feel like he was up on the card. In the 11th round, he finished real strong. And he went out there in the 12th round and took off. He didn't go out there and fight, finish strong. And I feel Jesse Vargas won that last round. And him winning that last round gave Jesse Vargas and Adrian Broner a draw. Now, with me, I feel like I was up my power with Arizona Law. And I remember Ernesto grabbed me by my face and saying, "You are the unified champion. You are the unified champion. Let's go out here and finish this round." But the mentality I have, I went out there and said, "Man, I'm going to close the show." So I went out on the 12th round going for the knockout. And I got the knockdown. And the knockdown was the side factor of the fight. Now, if I went out there with the mindset I ate the bone and just took off the round, I would if Law would have won it, I could have lost, or if I would have won, I would have had to draw. But because I don't know the mentality I had, it got knocked down. It gave me the fight.
Yeah, you left it all on the line. I think, I'm not sure if it was the 10th or the 11th round. We had copy box. You threw something like 90 punches. And that just alludes to what you just said, where, you know, there's a lot of times in these championship rounds, the 10th, 11th, 12th round, where a fighter thinks they have it in the bag. Jesse Vargas said it. Adrian Broner said it. I thought I had this fight won, so I took my foot off the pedal. Is that something that you take pride on, is, you know, throwing a lot of punches in every round, even if it's the 10th or 11th round?
Well, not necessarily throwing a lot of punches. You know, just making sure you're staying busy. Especially in the fight with a guy like Lauer. If you sit there and allow him to think and give him time, that's when he does best. So we wanted to stay busy with, you know, give him no time to think.
Why do you think he didn't move as much? When we watch Erzlandy Lara fight, he's a guy that's very slick. He's the Cuban style. He's in and he's out. With you, it's felt like he was, you know, kind of staying in the pocket a little more, up against the ropes. Do you think that's because of your size and your sheer volume, or do you think that, you know, maybe he wasn't at his best that night?
I think it had to do with two things. One, for me cutting off the ring, and two, I think he kind of figured him running all night wouldn't have been a good idea. He wanted to kind of prove that he could stay there with me a little. Mm-hmm. But I think mostly it was more me cutting off the ring and him saying, "I'm not going to be here. I'm out here to run. I'm going to stay here and fight too."
Do you have trouble getting down to 154 pounds? I saw you on Saturday. You're a big guy. I mean, I can't believe that you get down to 154. Do you see yourself moving up one day, or do you want to settle in a little more, have a nice extended run here at 154?
We're going to definitely stay here instead of win. You know, I'm trying. If it's God willing, I can run through my entire division, you know, become undisputed, you know. But if not, we're going to stay down here and fight for, you know, a while. But moving up is definitely in the picture also. Moving up to 160. I'm not sure if I ever go to 68, but we're definitely going to move it away.
Well, I have to ask you the question that's obvious here is Jermell Charlo. 154 pound, the other champion in the division. That's a fight that everyone wants to see. It's a fight that we can, you know, see be made with the politics of boxing, both you under Al Haymon and on Showtime. What do you think of the Charlos? Are you cool with them? Or do you, I know they're starting to make a name for themselves, and that's obviously a fight that you want.
Cool with them, no. But something personal against them, that's also a no. You know, they're just in my weight division, man. They're definitely guys that the world want to see me face. That's the mega fight. That's my Floyd Mayweather and Manny Pacquiao fight right now, and that's the fight that we want also. But you know, we don't want to rush into it. I just came off a camp with two southpaws, and we want to get some right hand fights under my belt. But one thing my team always talk about, we will not be moving up before that Jermell Charlo fight happens. Wow. So it's definitely going to happen. It's not going to happen, you know, my next fight, maybe getting another fight in after that, but it's going to happen sooner than later.
Yeah, that's one thing about you that the fans like, is your style is very TV friendly, and the fact that you will not back down from anybody. But how does it work? Like, after you beat Erzendi Lara, do you call up Al Haymon or you call up his people and say, "I want Charlo"? Do they come to you with options? I always wondered how these fights do get made.
Yeah, they call and they ask me who we like to fight or the names we would like. we throw a few names out there, you know, he'll say, you know, Samantha Geralta, that's a good fight. If that guy is so-and-so, well, he'll say, well, if you like a fight with him, then this, that, and the other. But he gives us a leverage to, you know, pick the opponents. And, you know, he lets me know if it's a good idea or not, or if a fight can be made.
I read an article saying that your mother wanted you to, said she was going to give you 5 years as a pro for you to make something. And then look what you did. In 3 years, you became one of the unified super welterweight champions. So did you tell your mom, like, hey, listen, mom, I'm going to be doing this thing for a while now?
Yeah, and it's crazy because not only did my mom give me till I was 25, I turned professional at 22. Not only did she give me till I was 25, Ernesto told me on my, when I had 20 fights under my belt, I should be fighting for the world title. And that's exactly when I fought for my, on my 20th fight. So it's almost like, man, we playing this thing straight through perfectly. And, you know, my mother told me that when you fight for your 20th fight, you should be knowing if you're whether going to do this for a career or not. But when I was 26, actually, I won a world champion.
Wow. Mothers know best. Is that right?
Exactly.
I want to talk about your coming out party here. In 2016, I thought this was pretty interesting. You fought on the Keith Thurman-Sean Porter card. That was a big fight on CBS. And you were scheduled to fight on the untelevised undercard. But then Abner Maris got an eye injury. Next thing you know, you're fighting on CBS in front of a huge audience. Were you nervous before that? Take us back to that experience.
Nerves, always nervous. But it's always good nerves. It's like I'm gonna fight back when I was supposed to fight Frank DeLaza. Mm-hmm. You know, Gary Russell was supposed to be in the main event, and so he had suffered a hand injury, and it made me and Frank DeLaza on Showbox the main event. And I just feel when those opportunities come, you can't allow your nerves and things like that to take over. You know what you gotta do out there. You can't let the crowd get in your head. And that's one thing with me being the personality I have, I'm a real relaxed and, you know, easy guy. So it's hard for me to, for people to get under my skin and let my emotions take over. I think that's one of the traits that I produce that's real, very well. When I get put in these opportunities and on these stages, I don't let it get overwhelmed. And it goes our damn show. And the fight with Oscar Molina, I went out there in the first round, you know, and threw an uppercut and made ESPN top three. You know, those are things, yeah, that on the stage that day, I think that was the fight of the year and the, you know, the most tuned in fight. I forgot how many fights that was at 2016, but, you know, that opportunity like that, and I went out there, wasn't supposed to be on TV and did something like that. It was amazing, man.
That's the name of the game, making most of your opportunities, and no one has made more of their opportunities than you. Jared Herr, before we let you go, your fight with Jermell Charlo, you say it's your Pacquiao Mayweather. Boxing fans all over the world want to see this. You have a message for Jermell Charlo because we know he's going to have a message for you.
Yeah, Jermell Charlo, keep running your mouth.
That's all he's going to do. You know he's going to keep running your mouth.
Right, yeah. Jermell Charlo, he knows that where I'm at, and now there's no fighter here that I'm ducking. So he knows the fight's going to happen. I know he's the guy that used to train with Arizona Lawler, and I feel, you know, Lawler speak on all the time. I used to get off on Jermell Charlo, and me beating someone that used to be his fellow teammate in the fashion I did in it, I know he's worried now. So he doesn't have to worry about me going running anywhere and be ready for him.
Love it. Love it. Jared Herr, thank you very much for joining us here on Inside Boxing Live. I continue to root for you and looking forward to seeing you in the ring once again.
I most definitely think.
Back by popular demand, it's a segment we introduced last week here on the show. It's called Tough Takes. These are smoldering hot takes coming from me and my esteemed producer, my brother, Nicholas Canobio. We'll bring him in right now. Nick, how was your weekend? We were out at the Barclays Center checking out the fights. We smelled a
busy.
We smelled some potent, some pungent smells.
Don't say that. Yeah.
We saw some really good fights. We may have heard a gunshot, may have not heard a gunshot. Yeah. There was a lot of beef this week, and it all subsided in the ring. Some great fights. We were lucky enough to be ringside once again.
Yes, it was an action-packed weekend of fights between Thursday's Golden Boy on ESPN, and then we were live at Barclays Center for a triple header. The first two fights, quick in and out.
Those are good.
And then main event was good. It went the distance. We would have hoped that it wouldn't, but it did, and it was entertaining.
Yeah, so let's get to our takes here. And I've been thinking all week about what I wanted to talk about here and observations. We watch a lot of boxing, the two of us, whether it's big fights at the Barclays Center and Madison Square Garden all across the country, and then there's the smaller cards on Estrella and Golden Boy, which provide laughs.
Estrella is always entertaining.
Yes, they provide a lot of entertainment. They provide laughs and good fights, too. You know, let's not take away from that. But here it is. My first tough take of the week is Uppercut Guy. Now go to any major boxing event, any club show. Go to a DiBella club show at you can't even go to BB King's anymore because they're closing it down. Yeah. Story for another day. But there's always one guy in the crowd that just is screaming nothing but uppercut. Uppercut! Yo, why aren't you throwing the uppercut? It's there! It's there! Uppercut! Every fight, there's that one guy who doesn't know what a jab is, doesn't know what a hook is, but according to him, the uppercut will land 100 times out of 100.
Yeah, they're always more present in the smaller cards because you can hear them more.
Yeah.
And you know, the smaller cards tend to attract, you know, smaller ticket prices, so you're going to have those experts that think they know the sport.
Yeah, they're like armchair quarterbacks.
Right.
But the only thing they yell is uppercut.
Uppercut.
Just I've been hearing it for 20 years, and they never listen. And no. Do you think the fighters can actually hear
them? Well, and in the cases of the first couple of fights of the night when there's six people, yeah, that's all you hear. But you know, you have coaches for that.
Yes, we got a silence uppercut guy.
Yeah, silence uppercut guy.
What do you got?
So we were at Barclays Center Saturday, and you know, I also promote MMA, so I know how to put a show on.
Triton
and usually
fights.
Triton Fights plug, and I know how to put a show on. And what we do in our venue is we have a little smoke machine that kind of fills the area with smoke. And
so does Barclays.
And you know, you get that aura of an old school fight. And yeah. Barclays Center doesn't need to have that machine because they have probably a couple thousand people passing around joints of weed and
joints of weed
and you know, it fills up yeah. the arena.
It was interesting this week because it was like, usually you go to Barclays Center, you're gonna smell weed, and it's usually like towards the main event, like right before it goes off, or like in the middle of the main event, depending how good the fight is. The Lara fight last time we were there, that was the only thing that got people through that fight, was smoking some weed. But this fight this past weekend, right when we got in the door at like 7 o'clock, it stunk in there.
I think they maybe pump it through the vents.
I mean, given everything that was going on this week, it was there was more security in the Barclays Center. There were cops. There were plainclothes cops. There was talks of gang violence and all that. So you think maybe they were a little more fair with the weed smoking. Like, hey, you smoke all the joints of pot that you just said, and you guys
joints
can
of weed.
Joints of weed, and you guys can just you know, mellow out and not fight each other.
What if you were you wanted to come to the fight, enjoy a fight, and you know, come Monday today we're shooting it. What if you had a pop drug test at your job?
You can tell people that you ate a poppy seed bagel.
What are you gonna do? It's like a Curb Your Enthusiasm episode where he has to explain that, you know, I wasn't smoking. I went to a Barclays Center, and you know, people were smoking.
This weekend at Barclays was nuts for a lot of reasons, and the fight week leading up to it. And then once you get in there, it always smells like weed. And maybe it's a question, if we ever get Brett Yormark on the show, executive of the Barclays Center Brooklyn Boxing, we'll be like, you guys gonna do anything to combat the weed?
I don't think they can do anything, but I don't know.
Pungent. I got one for you. Boxing needs to desperately redo the press conference format. I was watching the Broner press conference this past week. First of all, Broner was out of control during it. He had his headphones on. He's like dancing the whole time. Then he turns over to Ellaby, calls him you know what, calls him every name under the sun, says you're not with me, he gets into a fight with Ellaby. But you know, as I was watching it, I was just like so bored with it. It's just an old school approach that they've taken. You know, have a personality host it. That's my first number one fix for here. I was at the Showtime event, the Upfront they did it at in the city, and they had Charlemagne, you know, from Power 105, Breakfast Club, or whatever he's on. He hosted it. He brought some life to it. He brought some jokes. I understand that they can't bringing a guy like Charlene for every single fight, every single press conference, because these things add up. But find a local talent. You know, there's got to be someone out there that wants to host this stuff to bring a little more flair to it, keep it moving. Like, I'm sorry, Leonard Ellerbe, no one wants to hear you go on and on and on about the accomplishments and the accolades of Stephen Espinoza and Lou DiBella.
I got one, Michael Rapaport.
Michael Rapaport, I'll text him right now.
He's you know, who do you have on his show recently?
He had the Charlo brothers.
Yeah, you know, he could be good. He's a comedian. Maybe he can.
They got to do something. They got to do something, because it's getting. I think Top Rank kind of like redid it a little bit. Everyone's trying to be like the UFC. The UFC does it right, in my opinion. They have Rogan up there, who is a natural on a stage because he does the stand up comedy. But they have like a dais where all the fighters are on there. They all have microphones. They all can talk trash to each other.
Well, Dana White, too. He's just he's natural, good at it too. Natural, you know, speaker, and he's good with those. And he usually does the press conferences and stuff. So
you got to make it. You got to change it up. They're not showcasing the fighters' personalities. Where it looks like it's a chore for them. They look like they're dreaded. They sit there. They're almost half asleep. And then once they get up to the stage, they say some dried out response that they do every single time. And then it's more of Espinoza talking about the pie chart and the numbers, which are great, which is awesome. I mean, they have to do that, but speed it up a little bit, make it more entertaining, and I think that it'll make Fight Week even more entertaining than it has
been. either do that or don't do them at all.
Well, you guys,
what's the point?
I mean, they gotta get the press have to talk to the fighters.
Yeah, but then do that. You don't have to have it on camera and all that. You just do it. Just have press. It's a press day.
If they feel the need to do them, they have to make them more entertaining, because they're a drag.
Yeah.
What do you got?
Jim Gray.
What about him?
Jim Gray.
Jim Gray.
He's underappreciated. He's underappreciated. I don't know if you watched the Showtime fight at the end of the, the Broner fight. He let it play out.
Yeah.
I think it was Broner who tried to grab the mic, and
that's
wasn't
the rule number
it.
One. Yeah. Never give up the mic.
He wasn't having it. And then he let it play it out. He let them go back and forth WWE style, and he stood in the background. So, say what you want about Jim Gray, but he did the right thing there.
I like Jim Gray a lot. I feel like a lot of people have a problem with his abrasive style of questions and, things he's done in his career. He's had a few moments, the Pete Rose moment on the field asking him, do you think you'll ever get into the Hall of Fame at an All-Star game? People had a problem with that. But he's perfectly fit for boxing, because when he's in the ring after a fight, it's a really hard job. And me and you were back backstage at Barclays, and we were talking to Raul Marquez.
Yeah.
And he was telling us, man, you guys do the compu box, that's super hard. And, it was nice to hear someone say that how hard it is to do, because everyone thinks it's easy. Then I said to him, everyone thinks that you can do TV. You can just stand up there and talk about fights.
Yeah.
It's super hard. And it got me thinking about Jim Gray. It's a really hard job to go in there after the fight is over, talk to these guys who just for 36 minutes have been giving it their all, fighting, literally in there fighting. And I think that when he retires, Jim Gray, or he moves on from Showtime, he's going to the Hall of Fame this summer, rightfully. I think he belongs there. The guy's part of boxing.
Yeah.
And this weekend, I thought, was a really strong performance from Jim Gray. Having to deal with Broner is not easy. And he let Broner go off a little bit. He had some good comebacks about his tailor or something. And I thought, all in all, Jim Gray needs to get a little more appreciated here. So I know people like to get on him, but, the guy is a consummate pro.
Yes, Jim Gray.
That's it. That's all we got. Those are our tough takes. If you have any takes you want to share with us, please send them our way at CompuBox, and we'll sure to feature you here on Inside Boxing Live. All right, that's a wrap on this episode of Inside Boxing Live. I have to thank our guests Jared Hurd and Jarrell Miller for joining us on the program, as well as our sponsors Jack Doyle's Restaurant and Bar. Download this podcast on iTunes by searching Inside Boxing Live, and also you can get this podcast on the OG Podcast Network, and anywhere you pretty much get your podcast, you can check us out. We'll see you next week for another edition of Inside Boxing Live.